हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 44. One who engages in full devotion or service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. Because if you're always engaged in devotional service, you're not doing anything in connection with the modes. It means you're not. It's not that the modes aren't doing their activities, but it's you're not controlled by them. You're just working along with them. Okay? So therefore, then, one transcends the modes at that time because everything's engaged in Krishna service, so there's nothing mundane happening. Right? If one attains devotional service, therefore, he's certainly liberated. Right? That's the Brahman platform. When we're absorbed on, you're on the transcendental platform. They're not connected with the material. Generally, unless one enjoys material happiness, one cannot attain renunciation. Varnashram therefore gives the opportunity for gradual elevation. Yadu, the son of Maharaj Yayati, explained that he was unable to give up his youth, for he wanted to use it to attain the renounced order in the future. Right? So from that aspect, then that's a good thing. Right? So, sorry?
Very nice way to explain that you don't want to do something.
Yes, that's there. So whether there's a sincerity there or not, then that's another thing. But what Prabhupada is saying is that the Varnashram system is set up in this way so that one can go through like that and come to the renounced position like that. Like someone may be renounced, but then that means that that's practiced from previous life. So they've already acted within that position and come to that position.
Mm-hmm. What would be the measurement, but you know, sometimes we say that we all should be renounced, but that's, we are the vairagis. But yeah. Everybody's on the different level, yeah. So renunciation is different. But some people, due to their desires, they say that it's all right and they justify, not like him, but you know.
Means.
And then some they do renounce, but prematurely, and then they have to come back.
Yes.
So what's the?
See, is the renunciation is not a prestige aspect. So you have on the social, you have, you know, the aspect of the social prestige. From the Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, like that. And then within that, your knowledge, your wealth, your influence, you know, your age, sacrifice, relationships, and all that. That's all then considered there, and that then establishes that aspect of the need in human society. But actually, renunciation, that's part of the ashram side. So that's supposed to be a cultivation of character. Right, that's come from proper performance of duties, right? You know, proper piety. So then the ultimate piety is devotional service, so that's the most strong form of piety. The others, then they'll work gradually, but devotional service, that will work very quickly. Right? So when we take the renunciation as a social prestige, then you'll get the aspect of people trying to get to it so they may be premature, you know, or people presenting that they're renounced when they're not, or, you know, giving justification and things like this. Does that make sense? You know, you get that. But you also have those that, because they are attached and because the Shastra says that, you know, you can engage these things, then they'll take that. So it's more about the attachment than it is about the religion. In other words, would it be something they would do anyway? You know what I'm saying? So in other words, if they were going to be attached in that way anyway, then it's more that they're finding, oh, the Shastra then supports this. Rather than the Shastra says this is the way to deal with material desires, that's why I'm engaged in this way. Is that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, someone contemplates, sees, yes, there's material desire, how to deal with this material desire. So therefore, then, that's to go through the Grihastha ashram and then gradually come to this position. So if one is going in that way, then that's considered, that's better. The other way, at least you're connecting your desires to the scriptures. So that's also good. But it's not as good as if it's being done out of a sense of duty rather than it's motive passion that you're using motive goodness to justify. The other is it's motive goodness, and then you see that, you know, through that, then gradually you can come to the standard. Mm-hmm. Is that?
Yes.
That's why it becomes difficult. Prabhu asked a question some days back about that you have the same point being made, and so philosophically it sounds exactly the same, but in its cultural application you get two different ways of, or opposite ways of application, right? So the principle comes down to what's the intent, right? Means yes, you have the same philosophy, the form or the application will be the same, but what's the intent for applying that? What is your actual goal? Like we discussed that for devotees, renunciation is not a goal; it's just a tool that they use. So for us, it's just you're renounced because if you're not connected to the material, then it becomes very easy to be connected to the spiritual. Right? Then you have those who are interested in liberation. They're interested in getting away from the disturbances the material world causes. So therefore, then they will endeavor for this Brahman platform, but it's not from the position of service to the Lord. So for them, it's a goal. It's not just a tool that's used. So and then there's others where the sense gratification is actually their goal, and then by the Shastra, it will support that. You know what I'm saying? You know, the social prestige or this or that, or does that make sense? And then, you know, and then you'll see a wide range in there. You know, but that's coming back this way. You know, those on the renounced platform, the Brahman platform, that's basically one group. It's not a wide group, right? Because it's impersonal, so there's not a lot to, no variety there. You know, I say North Indian, you know, Mayavadi, South Indian Mayavadi, they're all the same, right? They're all Mayavadi, you know, it's like that. So then when you get into devotees, then there's also a wide range, but it starts there and then goes forward. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the common point between them all is the religion. But the difference is, for the devotee, it's only used to please Krishna. The other two, it's used to please themselves. But at least they're religious. You know, that's better than those who are attached to the material and oppose the scriptures. Right? Because that's, you know, that was what's his name? That's the Yavanas. You know. Yes.
What about that you mentioned that we will do it anyway because that's our nature. So how can we see that we are progressing if we are doing things anyway according to our nature, but should be purified?
Yes, but how much are we focused on? In other words, we're doing, but how much are we focused on following the scriptures and applying it that way?
So secondary and primary?
Because, yes. So if that's there, then even though we want to do this secondary aspect, we see the primary. But if the secondary becomes the primary, mm-hmm. right? In other words, if my enjoying myself is the primary and I can use scripture to support that, then the scripture becomes the secondary. Like that.
That would be sakkam?
Yes, that'll be sakkam. So, as a standard, we work for nishkam. We may not be, but at least that's our intent. We're trying. So the idea is that if there's proper association, proper understanding, then we may be situated in sakkam, but we're trying to apply ourselves in nishkam. So whatever degree we are, then that's good. So even though it's just on one degree progress, you know, in sakkam to nishkam, but it's a progress because the goal is sakkam. I mean, is nishkam, right? So then it works. But if it's like, oh, we're in sakkam, it's all right. Why worry about it? That's not good, like that. Because how will you progress unless you know where you're going and you're making that endeavor? How you get there, right? Just like we're here, we're trying to get to Calcutta. Okay, so, but the car is, you know, let's say, you know, over on that side, right? So then, in one sense, then we're not very far. But if we're, okay, it's time to go, you get up, you start walking, it's progressive. And if you just keep at that, one will get there. But if it's like, oh, we're only here, we're not there at Calcutta, we're so far away, what's the big deal? You know, we can relax, then you won't be getting anywhere. But the point is that we're here. If we think, no, we're already halfway to Calcutta, you know, then you're an illusion there. You know, you have the right idea, but you're still an illusion about it. That's not going to work out very good either. So the point is the reality that I am at this point right here, and I'm trying to get to that point, so then what are the steps to get there? Is that? Okay. Maharaj Yadu was different from his brothers. Maharaj Yadu's brothers refused to accept their father's proposal because they were not completely aware of Dharma, to accept orders that follow religious principles. Especially the order of one's father is very important. Therefore, when the brothers of Maharaj Yadu refused their father's order, this was certainly irreligious. Right? So his wasn't irreligious. He was taking one principle of religion and then to another, right? You follow the order of the father, but at the same time as the whole purpose of human life is to become detached from material engagement. So then considering that, then, you know, he's making that, you know. But, you know, he could have maybe worked something out, but instead he just takes that. So Prabhupada's point, he's different from the brothers who just didn't want to be old. They just want to enjoy themselves. So there was no consideration of religion there at all. At least in Yadu, he is considering the renunciation.
Right. According to the different levels of marriages, because he was from a Brahmin mother.
No, he's from the...
Yes, Devayani.
Oh, he's Devayani's. Ah, yes.
So can we say that he had those qualities of Brahminical law?
Means there would be that aspect, but then the point is because the mix, it doesn't necessarily always sit nicely. You know, you don't know which one will come up where. That's the difficulty. When they're the same, then you know it's always going to be consistent. When they're mixed, then one can come out at one point, one at another. But you could possibly say, yes, there's that aspect. But it's in reverse, so.
Yeah, because he's the Yadu dynasty.
Yeah, I mean, it works out, but, you know. Yeah, we're not in the Puru dynasty. So. Okay. Marajayati's refusal, however, was religious. As stated in the 10th canto, Yadoscha Dharma Shilaya. Marajayati was completely aware of the principles of religion. The ultimate principle of religion is to engage oneself in devotional service to the Lord. Maharaj Yadu was very eager to engage himself in the Lord's service, but there was an impediment. During youth, the material desire to enjoy the material senses is certainly present, and unless one fully satisfies these lusty desires in youth, there's a chance of being disturbed in rendering service to the Lord. We've actually seen that many sannyasis who accept sannyas prematurely, not having satisfied their material desires, fall down because they are disturbed. Therefore, the general process is to go through the grihastha ashram and vanaprastha life, and finally come to sannyas and devote oneself completely to the service of the Lord. Maharaj Yadu was ready to accept his father's order and exchange youth for old age because he was... because he was confident that the youth taken by his father would be returned. But because this exchange would delay his complete engagement devotional service, he did not want to accept his father's old age. Right? So as far as he's willing to do that, but he was worried that then devotional service will be delayed. Yes.
So why would it be considered irreligious? Because the other sons, they didn't want to accept the old age. But, you know, father was straightforward. He said, I want to enjoy. But their position, they want to enjoy also.
Yeah, that's why they're irreligious.
Yeah, but why are they irreligious? But he wants to enjoy, they want to enjoy. It's just
but because it's the father's, one's supposed to follow the father. So it's the father's request.
Even if he is like that.
But it's within religious context, as we'll see. Yayati, then he's going to be following all religious principles when he's enjoying. He's not going to go outside. He won't be sinful. So then the idea is that the father then can come to that position of renunciation, and then after that, then they can, you know. So from that point, it means it's not the ideal that he should be asking. But at the same time, as you know, things didn't exactly work out, you know, in a standard way, you know. So the whole thing is quite a complicated, you know. Yeah. He would have by nature married a Kshatriya girl had not had any of these problems at all. But because he married Devayani by, you know, her insistence, but then because of her difficulty with Sarmishta, then she makes the rules there. And then Sukracharya has to support that. But at the same time, as she is his wife, and being a woman, then naturally as a wife, she wants children. So, you know, there's things in here that just aren't appropriate. You know, they're there, but like that. So then he gets caught in that, which he could have avoided, but at the same time, if he was that detached, he wouldn't have the problem in the first place. You know? So he's acting according to religious principles. He said that was a personal kind of... it's not a religious principle that the arrangement with, you know, between Devayani, Sarmishta, and Sukracharya, and like this, that's just a personal preference. You know, so it's not exactly in support of Dharma, it's not exactly against, but so then he's having... You know, he's got stuck in this. You know, but whatever. That's his lot, and it works out.
So we basically can say that he got, you know, in trouble between two ladies, and then the whole...
Yes.
He just came, and then the whole thing happened, and then one
yes.
wrong move, and then the whole life is thrown off.
Yes, but at the same time as... You know, if it had been someone else, they would have been able to say, you know, control themselves and say, well, you know, unless, you know, we have to work this out, because at this point Sukracharya made this arrangement, and so until that, then he could go to Sukracharya and ask and this and that and try to work it out with Devayani. You know, that would be another way, but then that would take more control, more time, more like that.
Mode of goodness.
Yeah, mode of goodness. So it's an unfortunate situation. So in other words, this whole problem was actually created by his own wife, or both wives, one being opposed to the other being, you know, not considering, well, what Devayani will say. Why didn't she go to Devayani? You know, or why didn't she come and say, could you ask Devayani if we could have a child? Like, you know, this kind of thing. So, you know, that's the thing, is that there's what is the ideal of what you're striving for, and then there's actually how everything works out because of our entanglement in the modes of nature. Does that make sense? So we try from our position how to apply it best in our life. So we're trying to judge everything between, you know, what's inappropriate, what's appropriate, and what's the best for devotional service. Right? So impious, pious, and then devotional. So this, the other sons, then that was impious. Right? Then Yayati, it's pious. Then for Yadu, it's devotional. Right? So you have all these different considerations. So one has to see one's position and act accordingly. But the standard is Krishna consciousness. Is that... Yeah. Okay, so because the exchange would delay his complete engagement with devotional service, he did not want to accept his father's old age, for he was eager to achieve freedom from disturbances. Moreover, among the descendants of Yadu would be Lord Krishna. Therefore, because Yadu was eager to see the Lord's appearance in his dynasty as soon as possible, Yadu refused to accept his father's proposal. This was not irreligious, however, because Yadu's purpose was to serve the Lord. Because Yadu was a faithful servant to the Lord, Lord Krishna appeared in his dynasty. As confirmed in the prayers of Kunti, Yado priyas yan va vaye. Yadu was very dear to Krishna, who was therefore eager to descend in Yadu's dynasty. In conclusion, Maharaj Yadu should not be considered adharmagya, ignorant of religious principles, as the next verse designates his brothers. He was like the four Sanakas, Chatusana, who refused the order of their father, Brahma, for the sake of a better cause. Right? Since the father's duty is to bring them to that platform of freedom from the cycle of birth and death, and engagement in devotional service, then that was his consideration. So actually, by Yadu's consideration, he's actually fulfilling the purpose of Yayati's position as a father, right? But in consideration of Yayati himself personally developing and advancing, then that's another thing. So that's why it's a higher principle that as a father, that's what it's supposed to be. The father can find another way to work that out. Right? Does that make sense? So here it's that the acharyas are trying to show that there's a distinction between Yadu and the other brothers. Because the four Kumaras wanted to engage themselves completely in the service of the Lord as brahmacharis, their refusal to obey their father's order was not irreligious. Right? If it's for a higher purpose, then that's good. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, O Maharaj Parikit, Yayati similarly requested his sons, Turvasu, Druhyu, and Anu, to exchange their youth for his old age. But because they were unaware of religious principles, they thought that their flickering youth was eternal, and therefore they refused to carry out their father's order. King Yayati then requested Puru, who was younger than these three brothers, but more qualified. My dear son, do not be disobedient like your elder brothers, for that is not your duty. Puru replied, O your majesty, who in this world can repay his debt to his father? By the mercy of one's father, one gets the human form of life, which can enable one to become an associate of the Supreme Lord. A son who acts by anticipating what his father wants him to do is first class. One who acts upon receiving his father's order is second class. And one who executes his father's order irreverently is third class. But a son who refuses his father's order is like his father's stool. Footnote 21. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 44, Puru, Yayati's last son, immediately accepted his father's proposal, for although he was the youngest, he was very qualified. Puru thought, I should have accepted my father's proposal before he asked, but I did not. Therefore, I am not a first-class son. I am second-class. But I do not wish to become the lowest type of son who is compared to his father's stool. One Indian poet has spoken of putra and mutra. Putra means sun and mutra means urine. Both the sun and urine come from the same genitals. The sun is an obedient devotee of the Lord. He is called Putra, or a real son. Otherwise, if he's not learned and is not a devotee, a son is nothing better than urine. Straightforward. Yes.
So now Puru has accepted his father's request. So like when we compare, you know, between Yadu and Puru, then Yadu's position is that of devotion and Puru is that of dharma. You know? So still Yadu.
It's dharma, but ultimately he says about, he mentions about devotion. He mentions the devotion, but yes, you could say he's asking more on the religious principle, the other's asking more on the devotional principle.
So still Yadu's position is higher than Puru?
Basically.
Can we say that Puru was sentimental?
That's there, but no, but he's no, but he's following Dharma.
Yeah.
He's following Dharma. Like that. So it appears that for him then, you know, then it was okay. Then following in this way was he could see it'll work out still. See, because the other three brothers, they thought their youth would be eternal, so they'll just go on enjoying forever. But then, you know, at some point they'll get old. But, you know, Puru and Yadu understand, no, youth doesn't last. So they want to be more serious. So one is, you know, taking that position of Dharma, one's taking that of Bhakti. Yes.
Mara, so we see Dharma has many facets.
Yes.
It's not one flat thing.
Yes.
So how would we know which facet of the Dharma should we take in a particular situation? Because by our conditioning, we take what's comfortable for ourselves, basically. It is always in the Dharma.
Yes. It's just that that's why there's the hierarchy within, you know, respect. You know, what's the point? So devotion will always be the highest. Then knowledge, right? Then relationship, influence, wealth, fame, age, like that. It'll go like down like that. So all these things are to be respected, but there is a hierarchy within that. So if your father's telling you to do something that is, you could say, within the confines of the relationship between the son and the father, but it's not necessarily supportive of devotional service, then by not following and taking up the devotional service, you're following the higher rule of Dharma. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you have to see what's there. Like, influence is more important than money. Right? Money is more important than fame. Fame is more important than age. Right? So each one of these, as they come down. So we see is devotion and knowledge. I don't remember if influence or relation is higher. And there's also sacrifice. That's also, I think, right after knowledge. You know, it's like what someone's done and things like that. So then, yeah.
What is it hierarchy mentioned?
Manu.
Because we have the same difficulty, you know, in the court of, you know, Pandyas and Bhishma said Dharma is very complex. We couldn't understand what should be done, what shouldn't be done, and then, you know, that was, you know, serious mistake, you can say.
Yes. That's also, as I think later it's discussed, that because he was being maintained by Duryodhana, that has its effect.
On the consciousness.
Yeah, it clouds the consciousness. Like that. Well, the Pandavas weren't, so that's why Draupadi could see much more clearly. You know, Vidura, he's never. So Vidura, what was it? Vidura and...
Vikarna spoke.
Vikarna. Those two spoke up against it. So those are the only two that saw clearly. Then many supported that when it was there, but at the same time, because Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra didn't, then, you know, it kind of swayed back the other way. So, yes. So that's why one situation oneself, what will be the best so that one will be unaffected by these things. Sukadeva Goswami said, "In this way, O Maharaj Parikit, the son named Puru was very pleased to accept the old age of his father, Yayati, who took the youth of his son and enjoyed this material world as he required. Thereafter, King Yayati became the ruler of the entire world, consisting of 7 islands, and ruled the citizens exactly like a father. Because he had taken the youth of his son, his senses were unimpaired, and he enjoyed as much material happiness as he desired. In secluded places, engaging her mind, words, body, and various paraphernalia, Devayani, the dear wife of Maharaj Yayati, always brought her husband the greatest possible transcendental bliss."
Transcendental?
That's what it says. So that's the point. They must have been engaging in devotional activities, sitting down, and
that's,
you know, how
you
say, gold lame bead bags, you know, stuff like that.
You don't need you to be useful for that.
Then you very chant very loudly, you know, very enthusiastically. King Yayati performed various sacrifices in which he offered abundant gifts to the Brahmanas to satisfy the Supreme Lord Hari, who is a reservoir of all the demigods and the object of all Vedic knowledge. The Supreme Lord Vasudeva, who created the cosmic manifestation, exhibits himself as all-pervading, like the sky that holds clouds. Yes?
This idea of enjoyment in Krishna consciousness is... Now it's less, but before it was preached like this is total maya, enjoying mood, and you know, it's like it was serious point. Like, you know, every class we would hear something about it, how bad it is. So we hear in Srimad Bhagavatam it happens, and Lord is happy, devotees are happy. So how do we enjoy? With the Lord, for the Lord, you know. Is it sinful or not? How much is it sinful?
All the gradation tapes.
Okay, you're eating the pizza. Now, what happens if you put some olive oil in the pizza? Whatever, it's just very good quality olive oil. Okay. So, it's a matter of the perspective. It all comes down to that. Is that, are we seeing it as sense gratification, or are we seeing it in connection with the Lord? The senses are being engaged, but do we see it connected to the Lord? The idea where the senses being engaged at all is maya, that's actually impersonalism. Right? But if the idea is engaging the senses means sense gratification, and so therefore that's maya, that's correct. But the problem comes is when we can't distinguish between engaging the senses connected to Krishna and engaging the senses not connected to Krishna. That's where the confusion will come up. So sometimes, like I remember once we were talking about something about prasad and how nice it was, and then somebody says, well, that's maya because you're enjoying. So that's incorrect, because they don't catch that it's connected to the Lord. Now, within that, there might be a sense of enjoyment, so it's mixed devotional service, but it's devotional service because it's connected to the Lord. That process will purify you. You know, so there's sometimes, you know, from this idea, if we take it to extreme, then you get the ideas, you know, the cooking, it shouldn't be enjoyable, we should be doing a service that we really don't like. You know, we should put ourselves in the most uncomfortable situations, and then that will be, you know, more renounced, therefore more advanced.
Yeah.
But that's not our process at all, like that. You know, that's, you know, I say, you want to do that, you know, go to Hrishikesh or something, you know, like that. The principle is, no, it's the senses are engaged in devotional service. So what are the recommended processes of engaging the senses? You engage in those for the pleasure of the Lord. Then that's nice. That's why it says, when it talks about Ambarish Maharaj, you know, smelling the, you know, the flowers and incense you offer to the deities, tasting the prasad, you know, walking to the temple, touching the devotees, seeing the deities. So that's all engagement of the senses. That's the whole point, is that it explains how they're all engaged. So the point is then in this, then if one sees like that, then one is on that transcendental platform. So here, then, Yayati engaged in activities with Devayani. It may be that they're both on the transcendental platform, or it may be only he is. She's just doing activities as a wife. He's seeing it connected to the Lord and being able to function that way. So it's not just he says, oh yes, it's all connected. That means he sees like that. Like when we, some chapters back where we Prabhupada was talking about that the pure devotees, they don't actually see the material world. You know, it's not that they can distinguish what's there, but they don't see it in its, how the materialists see it. They just see that's reality. They see everything connected to the Lord. They see the Lord behind everything. So, yeah.
Another part of the confusion is that by definition, we're tyagis, but our actual process is a process of attachment. It's not a process of detachment.
No, but we're tyagis because it's detachment from the material world. Because
right.
All other tyagis, they're tyagis up to the point of liberation. So in that way, we're common with them. So the tyagis, the mayavadis, the impersonalists, you know, anyone performing nishkam karma yoga, like that we're following all the same process to get to liberation. The difference is all those others may or may not get to liberation, but even if they do get there, they'll never get past that. Well, the devotees, then it's about devotional service. So they're detaching from the material world and attaching to the spiritual, right? Attaching to Krishna. So on that side, then you can say, then we're pushti, right? Does that make sense? Pushti mark, where your nourishment.
Yeah.
Because that means on the spiritual side. It's just a matter of where you're focusing. But on the material and dealing with it, we're tyagis. But we're doing everything connected to Krishna, and in this way nourishing. But the focus is more on Krishna. Like that. Is that what it says? Yes.
Well, in this connection, once I heard one devotee explain that, I think it is in the Sudama Vipra pastime, that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions there are two types of pure devotees. One who takes the material enjoyment as indifferent, he's indifferent to the material, and others is purposefully keeps it less.
Yes. It's just a matter of what's the situation. Means if he's in a situation to keep it less, then he can keep it less. But if it's a matter of it's not going to be like that, then he's just indifferent. So we see Sudama Vipra, he has practiced both. So since on his own, then he would just keep everything less. But then when the Lord gave all that opulence, then he didn't keep it less, he just was indifferent. So he just engages everything in the Lord's service. So whichever works, you know, you have a big family, then you know, indifference will work. You know, you have something smaller, or you have, you know, the family members are also more simple, then you keep it less. Like that. Does that make sense? So it's just what will work for the situation you're in. So it's a balance between that, what is the Bhagavat, the Pancharatrik, you know, the Vedic, you're taking all that and balancing it. Does that make sense? That's why you have to know what it is and what it. We're not looking for options to how to, oh, okay, that supports what I want to do. You have to know the total thing, because otherwise, if we only see what supports us right now, what happens when we become more detached? Then what happens? Right? The person is totally into, okay, all this supports me being a grihastha and enjoying and being with the family, and I don't have to be too renounced. Okay? Great. Now, but he doesn't know anymore. Now what happens when he finds that because of that, there's a dissatisfaction? So dissatisfaction and renunciation are two different things. But because he doesn't know enough, he takes his dissatisfaction as renunciation. Then he moves on to vanaprast. Right? Without the wife, just moves out, goes somewhere, you know, just dumps her like that because he's being renounced. Right? You know, like that. So then the problem comes up is then as he goes along, then the difficulty, the anxiety that came up from that dissatisfaction, is going, and then he bumps into some lady who is nice. At least is perceived as nice, because he doesn't understand the difference between non-possession and possession. So any lady, when she's in the mode of non-possession, then, you know, you're only going to see the nice. But if she has the sense of possession, then it's more complete, so then you'll see all aspects. So then he'll get involved with that lady, and by the covering and throwing potency of Maya, then he'll end up there now with that new lady. And how all this is happening, because he doesn't know the philosophy, doesn't know the culture. So he only takes what he wants. He doesn't actually apply it. Right? And now he's just as miserable as he was before. Right? Does that make sense?
Maharaj.
Yes.
But can you not say that dissatisfaction is an impetus in the Buddhist
It's
ashram?
An impetus. It's an impetus, but it's not actually the main factor. Because dissatisfaction, what does artha mean? Right? You have artha, artarti, jigyasu, so an artha means dissatisfaction. Right? Either, you know, from the point of gyan doesn't want, or from the point of dissatisfied wants. Either way, from karma, gyan, either way, then it brings one into Krishna consciousness. So yes, it can be an impetus, but it should be an impetus on that. So that means now is it time for his grihastha life to end and he's dissatisfied. Okay, now it worked. What if it's not? Then he should go to that point of that neutrality, that indifference. Right? And then go on like that, because if he can do that for some time and get that practice, then vanaprastha will be very easy. And then if the wife wants to come along and like that, it'll be fine, because he's been functioning in that capacity already. And if not, then he can also continue. She wants to stay with the family, then also. So one must know the process and how to apply the process.
Maharaj, can you say that this Pushti Marga and the Tyaga Marga are directly proportional to each other?
The Tyagis is there focusing on the giving up. The Pushti is focusing on doing nice things for Krishna. So it's not that it's talking in the same category. One's talking about attraction to Krishna, one's talking about detachment to material energy. Mm-hmm. Right? They're both part of the same thing, but they're two different aspects. So you can't say that they're... It's not Pushti where there's Tyag. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's that the Pushti is connected to Krishna, the Tyag is connected to Maya.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So therefore, technically, then we're doing it for Krishna. That means it's renouncing it on the side of Maya.
Mm-hmm.
So they're one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of, you know, where you emphasize. So therefore, one's wearing a nice silk dhoti and the other one is not wearing anything but some ashes.
And if you combine, you are just...
Then you end up with the Nimbarka Brahmacharis.
Mm-hmm.
They, Admatapta once, when they were doing Padayatra, I mean Padayatra, then they stopped and they came across one temple, you know, and went in. It's all Radha Krishna deities, very nice worship and all that. And they're sitting there, and then the pujari came out, you know. So this, you know, your North Indian, you know, brahmachari sadhus, you know how they're kind of little stocky, and you know, so they had like that, and big dreadlocks, like that, wearing nothing but kopans, and they're doing the artik, you know. That's just they're tyagis. That's all, but they worship Radha Krishna, and like that. So yeah, so that's not our line. So.
Mm-hmm. I didn't quite understand what this vanaprastha should have done in order to become detached, because he kind of fell back into the grihastha ashram. The example that you gave that example.
Oh, so you're saying what should he have done? Means he should have understood his dissatisfaction means just the interaction between him and the wife then is mechanically not working properly, probably due to a lack of knowledge of how the relationship actually should work. So therefore, he takes it that he's becoming renounced.
Mm.
When he's not becoming renounced, he's just becoming dissatisfied. In other words, he would like the relationship to go on very nicely, but it's not, so he's dissatisfied. Therefore, he externally renounces, but he hasn't renounced the concept of that grihastha life is, you know, how you say, for the happiness to gain from it. He's just renounced being with this woman to do it. So then that's mistaken, for now he's renounced. And that lasts for some time until he bumps into a lady that he could see spending time with. Then he again takes up grihastha life. Because it wasn't about renunciation, it was about dissatisfaction in grihastha life. And he wanted, you know, things to go nicely. But, as Mataji said here, is that dissatisfaction can be a opening for detachment. If you use intelligence and see that the concept of grihastha life is not actually going to give any satisfaction, then from that means it makes you aware. Maybe before that you're not aware so much. This makes you aware. And then thinking about it, you come to that generic understanding. That's the difference. Then you can move on. Like we'll see, Yayati comes to that understanding. Because it's not this woman or that woman, it's grihastha life. That's the whole thing that has to be understood. When it comes to that, then one can go on to vanaprastha and sannyas. But if one thinks grihastha life is going to do something, then there'll be a problem. Does that make sense? So, as was being discussed here, grihastha life is the facility for engaging the senses and desires so that one has tried those and understood, but in connection with Krishna consciousness, so that trying them, one gets purified and one starts to understand that actually it's the Krishna consciousness that is nice, not the other things. Does that make sense? Sorry? Yes. No, that's that. Yes, like that. But it's the connection to Krishna that makes it work.
Not over much.
Oh, we're on the footnote. No, we finished the footnote. That is 21. So now, we didn't do Sukadeva Goswami said?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, how far did we get?
The Supreme Lord Vasudev created the
cosmos.
Yeah, about
1, 2, 3. Oh, okay. The Supreme Lord Vasudev, who created the cosmic manifestation, exhibits himself as the all-pervading, like the sky that holds clouds. And when the creation is annihilated, everything enters into the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, and varieties are no longer manifested. Without material desires, Marajyati worship the Supreme Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart as Narayana, and is invisible to material eyes, although existing everywhere. 41 to 50. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. Vasudev means he who dwells everywhere. Therefore, without effort, Yayati could meditate on him. Though externally Yayati was attached to enjoyment, he was not an enjoyer with his mind. He was without desire, nirashihi. Prabhum indicates that he desired dasya bhava. Right, so, in other words, what Yadu wanted and what Yayati wanted were the same. Right? And since it means of all the sons, then okay, then they have to work it out. But since Yadu was the only one that was seeing it from that perspective, then, you know, it's not a problem. So that way it works out for both of them.
Maharaj?
Yes?
Can you please explain this? He was not an enjoyer with his mind.
He was not an enjoyer with the mind. It means the senses are engaged with the sense objects, but when that information comes into the mind, then how do you perceive that? That's the point. So he's not perceiving it as for his enjoyment. He's just perceiving it as these are the processes of engaging the senses within the grihastha ashram. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the subtlety that comes in here. These are the we're getting down to these fine points that it's all about the connection to the Lord, not because otherwise, as Prabhu mentioned before, is that there's this idea is no, the senses can't be engaged. No, it's the senses can be engaged. It's that means whatever comes without unnecessary endeavor. We perform our duties, whatever facility comes from that, then that's great. You know, it's just like the, what do you call it? The, yeah, I think it's the music producer, right? He, you know, makes $900 a minute. Wow. He's putting in the same amount of time and effort as everybody else. Somehow or another, he's making that much. Not all of them. Just the ones we hear about. You understand? Someone else is doing the same effort and he's just barely making ends meet. You know, of course, I mean, this guy also is barely making ends meet because, you know, he has to pay for, you know, the yacht, the private plane, the limousine, you know, the new house, and, you know, they have one in Hollywood, they have to have one in New York, they have to have one in London, one, you know, like this. So it's tough. Life's tough. You know. So the whole point is the same effort is put in. Whatever you gain from your honest work according to your nature, then that's what you then apply. So then you apply that, and so the results that come, it's not for your enjoyment. You're engaging in the Lord's service, but it's not that the senses aren't engaged. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. Otherwise we think, oh, the senses can't be engaged. Or the other side is that, you know, what's the reaction to, no, any sense being engaged, that's all Maya. What's the reaction? Right? What's the next stage in the social evolution?
All I do is pure devotional service.
Oh, well, yeah, if you can do that, that's even, I was thinking about, you know, just enjoying yourself and everything like that. Oh, I see, yeah, okay. Yeah. So it just swings back because it's a pendulum swing because it's not exactly right. No, it's you engage according to your position. Like that. So it should be everybody's happy and nice, you know. Right? You know, the grihasthas have their house, the brahmacharis have their bucket of halava, everybody's happy, you know. Does that make sense? Then it works out. Yeah? Okay. Srila Sukadeva Goswami concluded, although Maharajyati was the king of the entire world and he engaged his mind in five senses in enjoying material possessions for 1,000 years, he was unable to be satisfied. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, the senses are called sinful senses since they are lusty for material enjoyment. Srila Prabhupada.
He is a very diverse personality. He was in Dasya Bhava without desire. It wouldn't satisfy his senses.
No, because the point means is that you engage the senses and the sense objects according to religious principles. That's when you notice that the senses can't be satisfied. See, if you're not engaging them according to religious principles, you're not engaging them in Krishna consciousness, one never comes to this understanding. One may become frustrated, but it's just frustrated that the situations I'm in, I'm not satisfied. That's why you see is that the guy's going along and doing what is that. He quits his job, gives up this and that, and then starts some completely new direction in life. Everything like that. Because this is not going anywhere. So he just changes directions because he has faith that I can satisfy my senses.
And took him 1,000 years to understand that?
That's not bad. How long have we been here? You know.
How long he has been there?
He can't do better because he didn't do better.
Something like that.
Oh, okay. So, The point is we're using the process of devotional service, so the process will go quicker. One has to understand this is how things work, is you're engaging the senses and the sense objects, right? Now, then if you're following the piety, then you're getting the maximum that the senses can gain in that situation, right? Just like, let's say, you cook something perfectly, then you'll get the maximum taste sensation you can get from that preparation. You can't get more, right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea in the Vedic, is you're functioning at what is materially the best. Then, so at some point, then it won't be special anymore, right? Now the problem is, because the soul, being Ananda, then needs to actually taste something that's superior. Now, on the material, you stop tasting it, then the concept comes up, okay, the material can't offer that, so one goes for a liberation, because it's a higher taste. But then after liberation doesn't give you taste, then because it's been sufficient time, then you'll go back to karma, right? So that's why the karmis and the jnanis, even if they're pious and do everything perfectly, will never get out of the material world. But for the devotee, then, because he's tasting things in connection with Krishna, he sees the devotional side is the real taste. So it's not that the expertise of the cooking, it's the devotion in which it's cooked and the offering to Krishna, and Krishna's accepting it. That taste is superior than the taste that preparation can deliver. Right? So that's then where you're seeing is the senses can't actually be satisfied. Because they can constantly be just, you know, you connect them and it's, they're fine. You disconnect them, then you connect them. That's senses aren't conscious, you know. So therefore, that's why you can't satisfy the senses, because it's dead matter anyway, right? The mind also, you can't satisfy that because it's also dead matter. So the only thing you can satisfy is the soul. That can only be satisfied when the soul is situated according to its natural relationship with the Supreme. Because ourselves being part and parcel of the Supreme is satisfied, we're satisfied. The example of the body, you feed the stomach, the whole body becomes satisfied, or water the root of the tree. So that's when we can see it. We've heard it, we understand it, then we apply it, we follow properly the duties we should do, so we're getting the best results. So then the senses are being engaged and engaged in Krishna's service. And so we see this is the best the material world has, and it's not as good as devotional service. Does that make sense? So that's what's happening here. So that's why it's not understandable. But you're engaging the senses, but no, you're connecting it to Krishna. But then if we're connected, why do we have to follow the Vedic? Because that gives you the best. Then it's the best to offer to Krishna, since it's for Krishna. But it's also the best because you see this is all that there is. So once one gets adjusted to it's about Krishna as the primary, one gives up that attachment to the secondary, one can function in the spiritual world because one will not try to enjoy the spiritual world. One will simply use the spiritual world to serve Krishna. But as long as you want to enjoy the spiritual world, we're given the material world, because it's dead matter and couldn't care less. Hmm. Is that what it says?
Maharaj?
Yeah.
Okay. Even though we know the tattva, you know very well, but still, as we are part and parcel of Krishna, when a part comes, you know, then this part is attracted to that particular part, like whatever sense objects, you know, eating, whatever, you know. So it is something working on the principle that, you know, like things attract each other.
But it's yes, but the point is what are we attracted to? We're not attracted to souls, we're attracted to dead matter.
Yeah.
So it's not like things are attracted on the transcendental platform. It's like conditioning is attracted. So in other words, the material, how we identify materially, when we find others that have similar identity, then we gets along. So it's connected with the matter. It's secondary, it's not primary. Srila Prabhupada elaborates. The Kad Indriya, or unpurified senses, can be purified if one engages the senses and the mind in Krishna consciousness. Sarvopadi vinir muktam tatparatvena nirmalam. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila 19.170. One must be freed from all designations. When one identifies himself with the material world, his senses are impure. But when one achieves spiritual realization and identifies himself as a servant of the Lord, his senses are purified immediately. Engagement of the purified senses in the service of the Lord is called bhakti. Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam, Bhakti Ruchate. One may enjoy the senses for many thousands of years, but unless one purifies the senses, one cannot be happy. Conclusion. According to the Vedic system, the parents should consider the horoscopes of the boy and girl who are to be married. Because if the boy and girl were on an equal level, the marriage would be happy, whereas inequality would lead to unhappiness. Right, so here's inequality, and it led to unhappiness. Right? Even 50 years ago, the system was current in Hindu society, regardless of the affluence of the boy or the personal beauty of the girl. Without this astrological compatibility, the marriage would not take place.
Right. Hmm. And the prophet says 50 years ago, so now it's not exactly going on?
It's going on.
It's going on, but it's less and less. But it means 50 years ago, it means 50 years ago from when Prabhupada said this. So in other words, 50 years ago, when Prabhupada said this, about 50 years ago, then we see is that it was very prominent. Everybody was doing it. Now, still, there goes all the things that Prabhupada talks about in the culture and all is still going on. It's just that it's getting less and less. It's harder to see. Well, before it was much easier to see.
It generally takes in South around 1 year to set a match. Because they see all these astrological things.
Mm-hmm.
It's a general standard, it takes around 1 year, even now.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So it means those who are cultured, it goes on. We're the only ones that, well, you know, should we? Well, no, devotees are, you know. But in the culture society, there's millions of people who use it. Yeah. It's pretty standard.
Even if a boy is very qualified, sometimes it takes 2-3 years. He has all qualifications, but his astrological charge doesn't match.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
Impressive.
Yes. That's why you're supposed to start earlier. Because the point is you want it to work out, the parents have to be starting before you're actually of age. The idea is that when you're ready to get married, it's already been worked out. Otherwise, when you're interested to get married, then you start working on it, then one's going to become frustrated. So that's why, also the other thing, why parents would be working on it, because you don't even think it should be, needs to be worked on. So therefore, they're already working on it. So another advantage of starting from that point.
And like even for the weddings of the girls, you know, when a girl is born, immediately, like right from childhood, every year, you know, some amount of gold is being collected by the parents, so that when she gets married, and by the time she's, you know, 22 years,
yes,
she's sufficient, you know, completely prepared. You know, so that's how this preparation goes on right from the birth.
Yes, yes, yes. So all these things are happening like that. You can see, I was reading something that. Your really, you know, more aristocratic families, it was talking about in America, you know.
Aristocratic, not even
aristocratic means much their concept. You know, those from the Northeast, they go to the Ivy League schools, all the preppy Wallas, you know, the, how you say?
The Boston Brahmins.
The Boston Brahmins, yeah, you know, the real snot-nosed kids, you know, those guys. So, that principle there is that when the child's born, then immediately start putting money or something, or something's done. Even if it's they're not very wealthy, something will be put away. You know, something of value. You know, that's unique and like that. So, you know, it's a standard also, you know, that going into the school, you know, then you apply for the school, you know, all those kind of things. You know, everything happens like that. So these things are always well thought ahead. Okay. Did we finish the
Udaharana?
Yeah, okay. A person is born in one of the three categories, known as Devagana, Manushagana, and Rakshasagana. In different parts of the universe, there are demigods and demons. And in human society, also, some people resemble demigods, whereas others resemble demons. If, according to astrological calculations, there was conflict between a godly and demoniac nature, the marriage would not take place. Similarly, there were calculations of pratiloma and anuloma. Because care is no longer taken in marriage, we now find many divorces. Marriage now takes place simply by agreement. The boy and girl simply agree to marry. The marriage takes place. When the Vedic system is not rigidly observed, marriage frequently ends in divorce. And so we see is even here is that, you know, the proper calculations, everything is that Devayani, then Yayati, but still she goes back and then tells her father. Then the father agreed. Then the arrangements are made. Review question. Question 2. Demonstrate the art of Mritu Sanjivani. Yeah, we're fine. Frog and that frog. Okay. Chapter 19. King Yayati achieves liberation. Pratigya. To have a satisfied mind, one must give up his heart disease of lusty desires. Because if one cannot control his lusty desires, he will never be pleased, even if he gets all the material wealth of the world. We have actually seen, especially in the Western countries, that men who have reached more than 80 years of age still go to nightclubs to pay heavy fees to drink wine and associate with women. Although such men are too old to enjoy anything, their desires have not ceased. As applying butter to a fire does not diminish the fire, but instead increases it more and more. The endeavor to stop lusty desires by continual enjoyment can never be successful. In fact, one must voluntarily cease from material desires. If one becomes Krishna conscious, then he can give up this heart disease. Otherwise, this disease of lusty desires will continue. And one can have, and one cannot have peace in his mind. Therefore, only a Krishna conscious person who knows the aim and object of life is peaceful. Adhyaya Prakashika.
This particular statement, you know, in fact, one must voluntarily cease from material desires. Is this statement not contradicting the statement in the previous purport, where it says, unless one enjoys material happiness, one cannot attain renunciation?
And then, but what's renunciation?
Yeah.
Means like, you were there, okay, let's just take this guy here. This 80-year-old man down at the nightclub, you know, having paid his heavy fees, he's sitting there with his wines, surrounded by a whole bunch of women, and then suddenly, you know, the double doors, you know, open, and there's these two big burly guys in black, you know, with the black hats on, and the little curly things that go into their ears show up at the door, and you've got the silhouettes coming in that goes across the whole floor. Right? Everybody steps back and, oh no, you know, who's it going to be this time, right? And then they come marching in with determination and focus, go right over to the 80-year-old man, you know, grab the guy, you know, push him on, you know, onto the table, put his arm behind his back, and then march him out like that, because now he's being forced into renunciation. Yes, that's how it works. You're not connecting the dots. Okay. So, in fact, one must voluntarily cease from material desires. So one's gone through those material desires, and then one, like Yayati, has come to the point to understand that there is no satisfaction in the material desires. Therefore, voluntarily, he ceases from material desires. Right?
Yes.
That's the whole point. So that's what they're making, is when, having gone through it, then you can see. So that's the point is, why does a Naistika Brahmachari not get married? He already has that realization now. So, in other words, the Upakurvana Brahmachari and the Naistika Brahmachari, they're both trained in the same way as Brahmacharis. But the Naistika Brahmachari understands and realizes that there's nothing. The Upakurvana understands but hasn't realized. So he engages the senses, then he realizes, then he renounces. Does that make sense? Yes. That's okay. That one. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Trinitai Gaura Prema ki.